The truth is, I'm the kind of person who takes risks and builds wings on the way. And I think that that's one of the scariest, most wonderful parts about teaching is it's messy. And a lot of people don't do messy, especially educators who like all their ducks in a row. Those ones do not like messy. And ultimately, if you don't have a relationship, then you're imparting knowledge, but you're not really teaching. If you're looking for them, you can create the kinds of structures where everybody can reach the sky or even further.
Welcome to the Rethinking Learning podcast series. I'm Barbara Bray, where I will have conversations with awesome educators, leaders, and change agents all about their purpose and passion for learning. Welcome, everyone, to the Rethinking Learning podcast series. And today, we have Noah Daniel. I'm so excited because Noah builds projects, initiatives, and capacity to promote student voice and propel engagement. I'm so excited to talk to Noah. I've learned about her on Twitter. First time I've ever met her face to face is here. So I'm really excited that she's here today. Thank you, Noah, for joining us.
I am so happy to be here. I mean, I've read your books and I participated in your chat and I look to you for guidance all the time, even when you don't know it. So I'm so excited to be a part of this.
Oh, well, isn't that funny? I do the same with you about things and with Twitter. You know, I've been looking at all your resources. What you say on Twitter is that you're a passionate educator, inspired learner. Go ahead. Tell me why you came up with that. Why do you say that?
I didn't come up with it. People would tell me all the time that I'm so passionate. How am I still passionate in 22 years in the classroom? And I really love teaching and I love learning and I'm inspired all the time to the point of ridiculousness because Twitter is this 24/7 access to learning and engagement and people are doing such cool things. Who wouldn't be inspired if you're in touch with what's going on out there?
Wow.
It's pretty amazing.
Hey, why don't you just tell us a little bit about you, where you live, you said 22 years, what were you doing? Just a little bit about you now.
So I live just outside Toronto and I have three beautiful daughters and this adorable dog and a really wonderful husband. And in the last 22 years, I've been teaching in a private school and two different schools, actually. After 14 years in one school, I went to another one and I've loved it. But a lot of things went down and I decided that now is the time. So I literally just launched my practice. I've been doing a lot of consulting over the years on the side and then people will ask me things and I'm like, I can't, I teach full time and have three children. But now I'm going to say yes to pretty much everything that I want to do because there's a lot of things I want to do that you can't only do in the classroom. So I'm really excited about what's to come.
Wow. You know, You said you're an educational coach. Is that part of your consulting or tell me a little bit more about that?
So over the last few years, I've been doing a lot of mentorship of new teachers formally and informally. And, you know, when a new teacher comes into the school, I'm always that person that they hang out with. And sometimes I'm asked to do it. And sometimes it just happens because I really love helping people and I really enjoy listening to their stories. So I've been coaching people informally and I've been doing a lot of work formally over the last year with other schools. And I see the power and potential of coaching in a one-on-one way in the same way that I see in the classroom when you work with a child. It's really about making people feel significant and know that what they have and what they want to know and what they want to do matters. And teaching can feel so difficult sometimes. And it's nice to have somebody in a non-evaluative position to talk to and work through the ideas. And I'm so grateful for my mentor who coached me. And if I could even give back like a tiny percentage of what she continues to give me, even though she's now only officially my friend, then I would be so happy.
Isn't that wonderful? I've been doing coaching for 30 years. This has been
well, I was looking into that about you actually.
And I actually took on a school in the Bay Area because I miss it. Just like you're finding that one-on-one and it's just so rewarding when you work with a teacher and they actually apply some of the things that are challenging themselves and decide to take a risk and it works and they call you and they say, guess what? It worked. Doesn't it make you feel good. It's so exciting, isn't it?
It does too, because you know that they might not have actually done it. They might have pontificated and ruminated, but not actually done it. And I think that that's one of the scariest, most wonderful parts about teaching is it's messy. And a lot of people don't do messy, especially educators who like all their ducks in a row. Those ones do not like messy. So telling them that it's okay to be messy and modeling for them that you've lived in messy and survived it is always helpful.
Do you do some modeling in the classroom too for them, or do you kind of just give them some feedback? What are some of the strategies?
Well, that will be something that I look forward to doing now that I get to do this more often, because I've been teaching full time. I really haven't been available to do it unless they were assigned to me, like if I was mentoring them officially or if they were student teachers, which I've done over my entire life of teaching. But this will be really fun. And, you know, I was working with a teacher recently and she really had trouble conceptualizing something that I was doing. And I tried to act, but it's not the same when you're not in their classroom. So I would love to be able to go into people's classrooms and help them. And sometimes that's the best way to get it done. So you being in the classroom, did you see a difference when you were able to go model that for people?
Well, I'm actually trying to not model as much since I haven't been in the classroom for a long time. So what I'm doing is giving feedback. And I've been really lucky that the way they've developed a contract with me is I'm developing a relationship over a year. So they even come to my house and we get to play and we come up with new ideas. And one of the big things was redesigning their classroom because they couldn't conceptualize getting rid of control. So the first thing was getting rid of that desk, the teacher's desk.
That must have been amazing to watch go down.
Yeah, that, just little things like that, which it sounds like what you're doing too. It's just really fun when you can actually go in and observe and the kids will come up to you and they say, "Hey, Mrs. Bray, we did something. What do you think?" And I'm going, "Yay." You know, there's a lot of, it's a relationship building. And it sounds like you have this wonderful opportunity to do that more now.
Because that's the job, essentially. Like, nobody tells you that when you get into teaching.
Yeah.
But ultimately, it is a job of relationship building. And that's how you teach individual learners. And ultimately, if you don't have a relationship, then you're imparting knowledge, but you're not really teaching. So hopefully all those things that you learn to do lead you to collaborate, whether it's with the learners in your room or the learners in the hallway or whomever you encounter. That's it. And I mean, I feed off of people all the time. That's kind of why I was so excited to be able to look at you while we're talking right now, because I feed off of people's energy. So in a classroom, I know if I'm not doing a good job because I can feel I've lost their energy or I have to switch things up a little bit. And that's why it's so nice when you develop relationships with people who are teaching and they let you in. And they say, "Okay, I've lost the vibe, help me get it back." But they're not actually articulating it. You just know it because you're in a space with them where you can feel it too. And it's all of that collaboration that I find so exciting. And I just want to help people be a part of that and touch themselves, like tap into those parts of themselves. A lot of teachers are afraid to be themselves and so they compartmentalize. But it's so beautiful when they get to merge all the parts of who they are, because it's something I've been unapologetically doing for so long. I think it's pretty cool.
Well, because now that you're not in the classroom yourself, it connects you back to why you went into teaching in the first place. Now you're able to provide some support for, like you said, new teachers, but even veteran teachers sometimes need to be nudged and nurtured along the way.
Well, it's funny, I'm that person that people will come to. So there are a lot of veteran teachers who will say quietly at my door, "Noah, I really want to try this thing and I don't even know what it's called. Can you talk to me about it?" And they know, because I'm not afraid and I'm not in a position to tell them that it's right or wrong, but just to talk through ideas. And I think we need more of that in education, because beautiful things happen when people do that and when people feel free to talk about what they're working through. I mean, I know I can't do anything without articulating it to somebody, even something I'm reading. I have to be able to communicate it to learn. I'm an interpersonal learner. So the more I understand that about myself, the more I can help people tap into how they learn the best, what modalities they need to build strength in, and ultimately to serve the relationship building skills in the classroom, because that's what we're doing there.
Oh, I love this. You're saying all the right things. I want to write this. Yeah, I want to write this in the blog that we're going to, you know, put with this, because it's so, you you're conceptualizing all the points that I talk about coaching and mentoring and why it's so important. So now I'm thinking of a title for your blog post now. You know, how I met you was through the Twitter chats, and you have, is it Ontario EdChat? Is on AON EdChat? Is that yours?
Yeah, we say on EdChat because in Ontario, our abbreviation is ON, but it wasn't my chat to begin with. Actually, Alison Fuez, who's an amazing thinker and just a wonderful human being, actually, she and a woman named Amy Boker, who I've never met, had started this chat. And there was a point where she wanted to create a more collaborative experience and share the load. So I had been participating in the chats a lot, and she kind of put out this, I guess, an APB of sorts, like who's into trying this out. And I joined this team of people. I can't even tell you what an amazing group of people. And even though it's changed, some of the people that I've met through that experience have just become such an amazing part of my PLN and really good friends. So it's a gift that keeps on giving, because we'll have a team meeting about what topics are prevalent in education in general, but more specific to Ontario. And then we'll chart it out and people will say, okay, I want to moderate that one, or oh, I've got a really good guest for that. And I was so privileged when you agreed to come on, you and Kat, I was so excited. I was like, I won the lottery when you guys came on as my guest. Because the truth is, I'm the kind of person who takes risks and builds wings on the way. So I didn't know anything about Twitter when I started. I was afraid all the time. And so I signed up to do this before I'd ever led a Twitter chat. So I signed up to lead a chat and then figured it out afterwards.
You just said something and I went, I got to write this down. Takes risks and wings on the way.
Build wings on the way. Actually, that Derek Rodenizer gave me that line in my very first podcast with him. And I use it a lot, because the truth is that we don't always soar. You know, sometimes we have to figure it out on the fly. But if we don't take those leaps, then we never get that feeling of elation of actually not hitting the ground. And it turns out that you're floating above it and you're making it happen, because the wind will rock you. But if you can find a way to ride it, you can do such cool things in life.
Oh, my goodness. This is so cool. It's like, I feel like I'm being inspired and want to just float away and just, you know, take the idea of taking risks. And the chats are, we've done them, and I've, you know, joined many that you've been on outside of on EdChat too. So that's how I met you. And when I started following you, I went, wow, this is an amazing lady. So I went to your website, and your website is called Building Outside the Blocks. Why do you call it that?
So it's actually a funny story. My mentor, who I fought for when I moved to my school that I just left, because really she's only supposed to deal with new teachers. And I said, well, I'm new in this environment. Please, please. I had this half an hour every week that I coveted my time with her. And I was given a job in my second year there that I didn't think I was going to survive. So I was given grade 4 language arts and literature and grade 6, 7, and 8 science. And when I'd never taught grade 7 and 8 science. So at first I really thought I was never going to handle it. And then I toured the science lab and I saw the eyewash station and I literally didn't think I was going to make it. So I cried a lot. And then I started building projects, things that I had always done that grounded me, because I knew if I could find ways for my students to see themselves, then I would be okay, because it took the pressure off of me. I knew I could never be an expert. And she came in the class and she's like, the kids love science. What are you doing? And I said, I don't know. It's like I'm building outside the blocks, but I don't know what it is. So for our half an hour session for the next month, I'm like, I don't know what it's called, but I'm doing something. She goes, well, let's talk about it. Does it have common characteristics? I'm like, yeah, all my projects do these things. So whatever grade or class or subject I'm teaching, and we started writing about it. And a month later, I'm like, yeah, it's called Building Outside the Blocks, and I'm going to call it Bob, and this is fun, and I'm going to make more Bobs. And it turned out that my principal really liked to move me around, and I ended up creating all these Bobs that I share with people now that do a lot. So I decided when I was starting my practice that it made total sense, because Bob just isn't a project approach. It's who I am and how I teach. I'm Bob and Bob is me.
Isn't that funny? I didn't know what Bob was. I kept talking, you know, Noah Bobs and all the things that you said. Now I get it. It's Building Outside the Blocks. What a wonderful story. And I'm so glad that your mentor is there to nudge you and help you and come up with that.
Well, so now, it's so wonderful. You do that for people every day. You ask those critical questions that push people further and make them see who they are. You've done that for me so many times. I can't even thank you enough for it.
Oh, well, see, I don't even know I do that. So that makes me feel good. I just know that when I find people that are passionate like you are, it's, you want to be with you. I want to be with you. And it's fun to be with you. And so now I'm going to be with you again after this podcast. You have come up with the Personal Playlist podcast. Do you want to just tell a little bit about it? I'm kind of excited. Sure. I'm going to be on it.
I'm excited too. About 4 weeks ago now, I was sitting with Stephen Hurley, who is the brainchild behind VoiceEd, and he's the producer as well. And it's an incredible radio station for educators. And it's a place and a forum for a lot of really interesting things. And he had been encouraging me, since I'm also on the OnEd Mentors team every Thursday night, I'm part of a panel of teachers that supports new teachers and encourages them and talks about all the things you never learn in the faculty of ed. And we support each other. And he kept saying, "Hey, Noah, hey, you want to do a podcast?" And I'm like, what could I possibly offer in a podcast? And we were having lunch because he's just the most interesting man. And I wanted to know a little bit more about him. And he asked me, and out of nowhere, I said, "Yes, I want to do a podcast. And there's a project I used to do in grade 7, one of my Bobs." It was called, well, I have a PS series because I have Tri-Bob. So this is the second in a Tri-Bob. And it was called The Personal Soundtrack. And the grade 7s who did it were so into it that my middle years coordinator actually asked me to videotape it a few years ago. So I have this amazing footage of the kids from another classroom. I had no idea what they were saying, talking about the impact of this project. So I said, I wonder what it would be like to interview adults about their personal playlist. So I called it a personal playlist because the soundtrack didn't seem the same. Anyway, Stephen said, "I want to be your first person." And I said, "Okay." And I'm 3 weeks today. You're my sixth interview. And I am transformed by this experience. So it's become two things for me. One is this incredible way to see people and talk to people about their stories through something seemingly other, right? Because it's music, but how people unpack their choices is so profound and intimate. And I feel really privileged that they're sharing this with me. But at the same time, it's the perfect metaphor for my projects and any real personalized learning, because you touch a piece of the individual that they don't even know they have. And you ask them questions that are indirect, that allow them to go on this personal inquiry. And through this personal inquiry, they have a better sense of who they are. And then they share it with everybody in the room. So we're all better for it. And we become a community where people are not only listening to each other, but they're giving feedback and owning the success criteria, where we're all truly moved. And when I first started doing it, the kids said to me, "You know what, Mrs. Daniel, we would also like to introduce what music means to me." So through them, I iterated and I added another component to the assignment because they were so into it. And then how we celebrate at the end of the year was I make a recording of all of their songs. So we have their soundtrack. So they taught me how important music was. And 2 years ago, my principal took me out of English. And that was something really difficult for me because I'd been teaching English for 20 years. And yet again, I didn't know how I was going to do it. So I created some bobs around music. So I found history beats, which I do in grade 8. There was a way to use music in the classroom, but also to bring history into the classroom in an analytical way through lyrics. So that's essentially how I got to the P3. And it's amazing. I'm really excited to talk about yours. I happen to have all the songs you chose already in my collection. So it was easy to get the recordings for you ready.
So basically what you did, you asked me to look for three songs. One's
Nostalgic.
The sound. Well, there was Identity. There was Motivational. And then there was a theme song.
No, the
right?
Nostalgia song.
Nostalgia, and not the motivation, right. Nostalgic right. song. So it was fun. I can't wait to talk about it. I don't want to talk about it here. I want to do it on yours. So it's really fun.
We're doing a twofer.
Yeah, this is a twofer. This is going to be fun. So, but it's neat when you say P3, it's called Personal Playlist Podcast. So we'll be linking to it from our blog post. So hopefully that'll get people to hear more about some of the ones that you're doing too. You know, you said something, and I can't remember where I saw this, but you do a lot about leadership culture. And we have a lot of administrators that are also going to be doing podcasts and sharing. So what do you mean by a leadership culture?
I mean it in a student voice kind of way. So I have never had a formal leadership position. Everything I've done, I've kind of built outside the box. But I have had the privilege of running all the student activities. So I've created a lot of different organizational charts so that students could be themselves outside the classroom and explore parts of themselves and truly do authentic work. So over my many, many years, it's probably one of my favorite things that I do, because I have, like, when my students put a newspaper together, for example, and I have kids who are really into drawing and they get in trouble in class all the time, all of a sudden there's this place to manifest their real talent. So they're creating comic strips, and then other kids who are gamers can write articles about the games that they love, and kids who are into fashion. So places that they don't always see themselves outside, inside the classroom, there are ways to create things for them. And I was doing the org chart for our middle school, and I was seeing that there was a piece missing. So there were all these kids who were really great at sports. I mean, great, like they could talk through sports. And I learned, so I do something called Friday Photo, and I learned through a Friday Photo with a Jose Bautista bat throw that my students can do a play-by-play in ways I could never do. And I was thinking, man, like I need to find more places for them. So I created Sports Desk, and they had a video recording, and we had some audio pieces, and every Friday they did something on the announcement. So basically, it's whoever's in the room. So if I say, okay, I've got these kids and they're not involved, I could create something for them where they could feel whole. And it really makes a difference. And I've heard from feedback from many, many years of doing this that it impacts their lives. So that makes me feel wonderful. And I help people when I do workshops on creating a leadership culture, see that there are ways to create opportunities for more kids to be involved. And not everything has to be an elected position, that there are ways that committees can have different layers of responsibility, but kids can volunteer their time and understand how to build something and understand how to create something and understand how to backwards design in ways that are so much more self-directed. Anyway. Wow.
That's wonderful. I mean, one of the idea of personalized learning is to teach, to help all learners become self-advocates and self-direct their learning. But the only way to do that is they understand that they too have a voice and choice and have a power of knowing that they have those leadership qualities. And I love the way that you're doing that. That's really powerful. Really powerful.
What's cool about it is you need structure sometimes to. So when I was redoing my website, I was trying to conceptualize what it means to build outside the blocks. So I found from this building stock photos of this frame of a house where you could see the sky. And that's kind of what it is, whether it's in the classroom or outside the classroom, there's structures you can create that optimize those opportunities for students to see and be themselves. But sometimes you can't just say, here, carte blanche, go find yourself. It doesn't work that way. There has to be a catalyst or a provocation. So if you're looking for them, you can create the kinds of structures where everybody can reach the sky or even further.
Oh, wait, that was... Oh, this is so amazing. Just the idea that anybody can find themselves the way you're talking. And I'd love to see that graphic that you
it's on my website. But I mean, yeah. The truth is it's about responsiveness. And you write it too, like you were talking about engagement being an effective skill. Yeah. In the first book. And what's interesting about that is I think that in the classroom, sometimes we think of effective skills as something separate, and we forget that that's part of seeing the whole child. So if we have learners and we understand that them being engaged isn't just about their interests, but about who they are as human beings and giving them opportunities to explore that. Like one of the challenges I find with modern learning, and it's so amazing, all these innovations, but they're taking kids further and further away from themselves. And mindfulness is showing us that there are ways, in fact, to channel yourself in class. And it doesn't have to necessarily be through meditation, that there can be opportunities. And that's where my Bob projects really excite me all the time. And I change them based on student feedback, because they say to me, you know what, I didn't feel connected. There was no opportunity for me. So then I find something for them, because that's the idea, is that if we can help them see who they are and explore themselves, then they feel connected to their work and then they meet with success. And I like the idea of going from strength to strength. So many kids have never experienced success. My friend Jen Giffen tells this amazing story about a child that she helped prepare a paper. And on the day that it was due, he didn't hand it in. And she was going crazy. Like, how could he not hand it in? She prepped him for success. And he said, when it's in my backpack, it's still good. Oh. And it's heart-wrenching because kids function like that all the time. But if you give them a way to feel successful at school, then that becomes schema that they can tap into later in life. And if we're really lucky, it can be something that connects them to themselves.
Oh, no, I could talk all day with you. We're trying to keep our podcast, you know, at a certain time, and I'm going to have to close pretty soon. But I do have to tell you, you've inspired me. I feel like I need to do this again with you just to go into more detail about some of the Bob projects and learn. And also I learned that you've written some children's books, right?
Yes, and kind of in a Bob way, because, you know, most people write a book and they try to get it published. But I was actually in a film festival committee, and this guy, I was sure it was a pickup line, basically asked me if I could write. And I'm like, I don't know. I've been writing my entire life. What does that mean? He said, well, I'm a publisher. Let's go out. And as we were going out, he started looking through my files. And I had just written, my grandfather, who had Alzheimer's, had just gone into a home for doing some odd things, we'll say. And almost like a mantra, I started saying Alzheimer's, old timers, Alzheimer's, old timers, the entire way back from the hospital. And like all of my writing, it kind of came out of stickies all across my apartment in this grand release. And he looked at one of those pieces and he said, you know, I was prepared to let you down. And I didn't even know I was being let down because I didn't fully understand why I was there. But he said, actually, this is incredible. I want to publish it. Here's a book I've been working on for a year. Can you do something with it? And all of a sudden, by the next year, I had two children's books out. So that was an amazing experience. Wow. But I've been so lucky in my life. I've had these snapshots of other worlds. One day I would really like to, I've written a lot of pieces, mostly for my students, but there are a few pieces I've written for my children that I might try to have published one day. I probably won't work because none of my stuff works if it's in the box. If it's outside at all, it's beautiful. I don't know. I guess I'm just destined to be that person.
Well, you know I'm like that, right? Well, so that's why we connected. I always said I'm outside the box. I'm outside the box, but I never said outside the block. So that's the new one. But I definitely really, really enjoyed our conversation today, Noah. You're like you said, you promote student voice and propel engagement. You did that today with me, just learning about you and, which I never knew. Some of the things you mentioned are all new for me. So definitely excited about writing up a piece about this with you and putting some more links and maybe even links to your books if you want. But thank you so much today. This was amazing.
I hope this is the beginning of many more conversations to come, virtually or face-to-face, or I'll take it any way I can get it.
Oh, yes. Right. This is definitely the beginning of many. Okay. And thank you so much. This has been, like I said, you're a mom of three, passionate educator and inspired learner, but you inspire many. Thank you so much, Noah.
Thank you.
I'd like to thank you for being on Rethinking Learning podcast series. This has been a wonderful podcast today with Noah Daniel. Thank you. Thank you for joining our Rethinking Learning podcast series, Conversations on Learning, today with Noah Daniel. If you would like to learn more about Noah, visit barbarabray.net. And then we'll have a complimentary blog post about her building out the blocks. So I hope you subscribe to the Rethinking Learning podcast series and become part of the conversation.